This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
House State Affairs will come to order. I'd like to welcome everybody that's here this morning, welcome everybody that's listening on the internet, and would ask everybody that's here if you would please turn your cell phones off or mute or airplane mode, whatever you choose to do. With that, I will have the secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Anderson,
here.
Dennert,
here.
Diedrich,
here.
Goodwin,
here.
Gosch,
here.
Hansen,
here.
Haugard,
here.
Jensen,
here.
McCleary,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Smith, Beal,
here.
Quam,
here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Okay, we have a quorum. I will ask for approval of the minutes.
So, second.
Who moved and who seconded? Moved by Clary, seconded by Goodwin. When I'm looking the wrong way, I don't always hear it.
Thank you. I would like to remind testifiers to sign in and make sure that the lobbyists are wearing the appropriate badges. All testimony and questions will be addressed through the chair. We have a couple pages here. I would like to have them come up and introduce themselves, if you would, please.
Hi, I'm Katie Natvig. I'm a senior here in Pierre, and I'm planning on going to South Dakota State University to study business, and then I'd like to go to law school and hopefully get into politics.
Hi, I'm Mark Feifley. I'm a senior at Sioux Falls Lincoln, and I plan to go into computer science.
Okay, thank you. Glad that you are here. Well, I will apologize to the people that are listening or in the audience. It was the governor's prayer breakfast this morning, and when I set the schedule, I forgot about that. So my apologies for being a little late. Some of us were there, and we had to leave a little early to get here. But glad to be here. So with that, we will move on to our first. 1004, we are deferring to a later date where there's some discussions going on with that. So 1004 will be deferred. With that, we will move on to our first bill, House Bill 1001. Do we have any proponent testimony? Good morning, Mr. Speaker.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the State Affairs Committee. Pleased to be here this morning in regard to HB 1001. HB 1001, 2, and 3 are similar in the sense that it's a step in the direction of taking some things out of statute and simply relying on our rules as should be for the legislature to abide by. I'll begin on House Bill 1001, which, as I look through it, there are a number of these things that are not in the Constitution. The first section, 2-4-1, is in Article 3 in Section 7 of our Constitution, so it's redundant in that sense. And I looked at the start date of most of these statutes, and they range anywhere from 50 years after statehood to 127 years after statehood. So we were able to do well without them for that period of time. And that's really the intention, is to repeal things that don't need to be in statute and to simply recognize that they're either contained within the Constitution or that they should be more properly held in the joint rules, which have been revised to address those issues. So that's the essence of HB 1001. Stand by for any questions.
Okay, thank you. Any further proponent testimony? Any other proponent? Do we have any opponent testimony? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Nathan Sanderson. I'm the executive director of the South Dakota Retailers Association. I rise in opposition to House Bill 1001, and you might see me a couple more times this morning as well. It's deja vu. I was in the same chair in front of the same committee last year, and we were talking about House Bill 1133, which is a bill to repeal a variety of different sections of the code. The conversation at that time was that this was red tape, and we're just cleaning up the code. Now we're here in 2020, and there are a variety of different measures that are going to be brought forth to repeal sections of statute, some of which will go into rule, some of which are redundant in the Constitution, and others, I think, which would allow for changes in the legislature that perhaps haven't fully been voiced. I agree with the Speaker, who talks about that a lot of these provisions were put in place in 1939, 50 years after statehood. I would submit to you not that we managed to survive for the first 50 years without them, but that we've been operating for the last 80 years with them. I think these are good statutory provisions to have in place so that we know how the legislature as a body is going to function. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm all about cutting red tape. And while I would submit to you that I think that the entirety of House Bill 1001 could go away, there are a couple of provisions that it wouldn't bother me in the least if you wanted to retain. As was mentioned, Section 1 is in Article 3 of the Constitution. If you chose to cut that, there's no issue with it. It just says that when you're going to meet as a legislative body, and again, that's in the Constitution. Section 6 and 7 really relate to the legislative page program. No problem there. I mean, that's not part of the fundamental building blocks of the legislature. If you feel like you want to repeal those things, that doesn't really impact me. I was told that they were put in place because the page program was controversial when it was first brought forward in the 1970s. I don't believe that it's controversial any longer, and I don't think that it deals with the core functions of government. But sections 2, 3, 4, and 5, I think, are problematic to repeal. So let's say, for instance, that you believed that the officers and the employees of the legislature were not adequately compensated. So right now, this bill would say that Section 2 outlines in statute who the elective officers of the Senate are. Section 3 outlines who the elective officers of the House are. Section 4 isn't really relevant to what I'm mentioning here, but kind of an important provision on how you handle a tie in the House of Representatives. But Section 5 talks about the appointment of legislative employees by the presiding officers. Now, this is getting a little wonky, but in the statute, it's not entirely clear who is an elect or who is an officer. You know, if you look in Section 2, it talks about the elective officers of the Senate, but then it talks about one secretary and other such officers as shall be necessary. Is the secretary of the Senate a member of the body, or is it not? That's not entirely clear in there. Later on, it goes down to talk about the employees of the legislature. And so if you were interested in compensating officers and employees more, how would you go about doing that? Well, the first thing you would do is you would cut the sections in House Bill 1001 that outline who exactly those folks are. Then, in a couple of minutes, we're going to talk about House Bill 1003, which deals with how legislative employees and officers are compensated. And again, it's not entirely clear in the statute who is an officer and who is an employee. But if you wanted to pay those folks more, you'd repeal those statutory provisions as well, because you also would then, as was proposed in the legislative procedures hearing, amend Joint Rule 3-1 that talks about the appointment of legislative employees. And last week, a number of you had a conversation in legislative procedure about who gets to set the compensation for those. Should it be a joint select committee, or should it be the Speaker and the President pro tem? The proposal at the time was to allow the Speaker and the President pro tem to set that compensation. That was rejected in the legislative procedures committee in favor of the current practice, which is to allow a joint select committee to do it, which is what is included in the statute. I would submit to you that we are undertaking a number of changes as a legislative body. We can have a conversation about the electronic system, which I think is a great move in the right direction. But we've had issues with the actual core business of making laws. And now we're adding on to that additional complexities that would enable changes in our legislative process that are largely outside the public's ability to interact. I'll harken back to the legislative procedures hearing. an agenda was posted that posted for two new joint rules, pardon me, and 15 amendments to joint rules. You could see the agenda, but you could not see what the actual changes were. There wasn't a call for proponent testimony or opponent testimony, although I will submit that the chair did invite comments after they were done. That was great. But nobody had the opportunity to see on the system which amendments were being contemplated. I submit to you, this is not good government. This is not good for open government. This is not good for transparency. It's not good for engagement of the public in the process. And I would encourage you to reject House Bill 1001. I'll stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any more opponent testimony? Any more opponent testimony? Okay, seeing none, I will ask for a rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Leader. Steve Haugard, District 10, in regard to House Bill 1001. I would just point out that, the procedures as far as the Joint Rules Committee, and maybe some of that was because of our new system, I believe that's open and transparent and fully available to the public to be engaged. But those are the rules of the legislative body itself. And that's where these types of issues should reside, is within the legislative body. And simply to take some of these things, as was agreed upon, at least by Mr. Sanderson, in regard to the portions that are contained within our own Constitution, they're redundant. The other items are issues that should solely lie within the legislative body to decide from session to session what they choose to do, how to conduct their own affairs. And we're not taking anything away from the public as far as transparency. It's still there. They can be engaged as much as they choose to be, but the legislature still makes its rules. And I think it's appropriate to begin to clean up what we have in the books now and to move forward and to get our feet under us, as it were, as far as conducting our own affairs. So that's the purpose and intent of these bills this morning, especially 1001. And I would invite Mr. Cummings, if he has any comments he'd like to make, Wenzel Cummings, the code counsel, if he has any comments he'd like to make in regard to the specific items that were mentioned.
Mr. Chair, Wenzel Cummings, your code counsel. As I understand it, these actually have been posted since November. The e-board was considering them at their November meeting, so this has been open for public discussion since that time. Other than that, I'm happy to take any questions if you have any.
I will open it up for questions at this time. Anyone have any questions? Any questions from anybody? Okay. Then I will close the... Yes.
Sure.
You know, part of this is to demonstrate that we support our Legislative Research Council, that we trust in the advice of our council, that we're satisfied that they're watching out for the best interests of this, from their nonpartisan perspective, looking out for the best interests of the legislative body. And that's what a lot of this is about. As Mr. Cummings mentioned, those rules were posted for review. The meetings are open. The only time we don't have anything open to the public is in executive session. So everybody can be engaged, but it's still the rules of the House and the Senate. And I think we ought to be supportive of the LRC. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, with that, I will close the public testimony, and I will open it up to discussion. Any discussion on HB 1001?
Mr. Leader.
Representative Anderson.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I just see this in a different light in regards to the public. every so often somebody from the public will come up to me and say, you know, I've been told by this agency that I must do this or I can't do that, whatever it may be. And you try and find it in statute, and you don't find it in statute because it's buried in rules. The public sees us as a legislative body during the legislative session enacting laws and statutes. The public does not, for the most part, the public does not deal with or follow rules. I mean, you don't hear on the news every night about some new rule that an agency put in place. It doesn't happen. And so, while there may be some duplication between rule and statute and constitution, that doesn't hurt anything. The redundancy in that case hurts absolutely nothing. It just provides more places for people to possibly hear or see about that rule. So I just don't feel a great need for these repeals, and I would encourage the committee to vote no on House Bill 1001. Thank you.
Any further comments? Representative Haugard.
As part of the committee, you know, you mentioned rules. I was on rules review for a year and a half or so. That's very much in the public eye, and it's very much out there, and it has a tremendous impact on all of state government. And so much of what happens in our state government is done by rules. 1,454 statutes where we've abrogated our responsibility in a large sense to rulemaking. And those rules are all posted. Those are all open meetings. Those are all available to the public. If you want to read the rules, you can click on that link just as well as you can click on the codified laws. And you can find those rules just as easily. So I would submit that it's appropriate to be in rules. The public wants to know what's happening within the legislative body. They can probably find it a lot more easily within rules under the legislature than they could if they were going to search the code. So for those reasons, I think we ought to be, as I say, supportive of our code council and the direction that we're trying to take things and cleaning up the code and addressing the concerns of the legislative body. So I would encourage support of the bill.
President Anderson.
One quick reply. I guess I just can't help it, but I am reminded again and again of former Representative Roger Hunt and his warning us about putting things in rule rather than having them in statute. Thank you.
Mr. Leader.
President Haugard.
Having been a partner with Roger Hunt for many years and sharing his same concerns about a variety of things that happened in the legislature, he was talking specifically about the legislature abrogating its responsibility to the agencies. And I was on the House floor with him when he would talk about that. And I likewise said the same thing about a number of the bills that we passed. Don't pass off our responsibilities to the agencies. This is different. This is the legislative body itself. And as I said before, the rules are still clearly transparent and open to the public. But it's the legislature that should run its own show.
Representative Gosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I would... I'm going to reiterate a lot of the same points. We constantly are going through and we're saying, well, that's not our job. That's their job as an agency. They should be able to promulgate rules. And then we go off. And as a legislator, I can't tell you how many rules there are out there, but that's correct. But to say that they're not reported is a fallacy. I was a reporter in Mobridge, South Dakota for a little radio station called KOLY. I have myself reported on rules that were done in the South Dakota legislature before I had any aspirations of getting involved in politics whatsoever. And I'm sure my colleague over here to our left would probably say the same thing. So to say that they're not open would be a bit of a fallacy. I do run into some consternation. Do we govern ourselves? Are we an equal branch of government or not? And in the event of that, if we do truly want to be open, there isn't a single lobbyist I don't ever see carrying a red book that fits in their coat pocket. But meanwhile, when I get asked, well, why are you doing things this way? It's because it's in law. Why don't you take a look? Go ahead and look it up. Or we go back to the, because it's not in our rules, it's in Mason's manual. Go ahead and read that Bible. I'm 3/4 of the way through, by the way. Very dry read. Not fun. This is all about just trying to clean things up. Our code counsel went through, looked at it and said, these are just things that don't need to be in statute, but whatever. I mean, I don't know. I just can't believe we're having this this conversation. And if this is the way we're going to feel, that we should not change rules, they should be in statute, then I expect to see votes this year. When I see a promulgated rules in a statute or in a bill, I should see a no vote. Because that needs to be a statute. We should not allow them to promulgate a rule. I guess that's where I stand.
Any other comments? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think of this in a couple of different ways. First of all, I think of the fact that you take the same language if it's in rule versus if it's in statute. If language is in a rule, not a statute, then a simple majority vote of the legislature could vote to suspend the rule and then do whatever they want to outside of that stated rule. And so when I look at this proposal, I'm keeping that in mind and I'm thinking, if we move these things to rule, what abuse does that open the process up to? And as I look through all of these, I think maybe Section 4 gets a little close when you talk about what happens in a tie vote. Even then, you could, play that out and make the argument that if there's a tie vote, there's not going to be a majority with the ability to override the rules, likely. But, if you just game plan that or game play that out in your head, I mean, that could lend itself to a certain level of abuse and gamesmanship, perhaps. But when I look at these other sections, for instance, I mean, Mr. Sanderson mentioned 1, 6, and 7. In his opinion, he thought those were fine to be under legislative control. I look at section, 5, for instance. The Speaker of the House shall appoint employees necessary to properly conduct the business of the House. And the President pro tem do the same for the Senate. If for whatever reason the legislature decided that shouldn't be how it should be, that it shouldn't be up to the Speaker, maybe it should be up to a committee of people. There's no reason why we shouldn't be able to do that. And under the law today, though, we couldn't do that. But why not? I mean, that seems like something that we should be able to manage internally. And when I roll through the other ones, I mean, I don't want to belabor this, but I'll just sort of restate my original point, which is I look for areas in which the process could be abused if a majority of the members were able to override that rule. I see a shred of concern as to Section 4. The other sections, I just think that they're perfectly appropriate to be placed in rule, and therefore I wouldn't have a problem with this bill. I think we can live either way, but certainly I don't think it lends itself to any real problems if we were to pass this bill. Thank you.
President Haugar.
I would just point out it takes 2/3 to suspend the rules.
Any other comments? Okay, any other comments and or action? President Gosch.
Move to pass.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Beal. Any more discussion?
You know, I guess I would just say we've probably talked this bill to death. It's quite literally had almost three hearings, public hearings now. So I don't know that we need to go into it any further.
Okay, very good. Well, with that, I think we are ready to vote. I will have the secretary call the roll. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no.
Representatives Anderson.
No.
Dennert.
Aye.
Diedrich.
Aye.
Goodwin.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Haugard.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
McCleary.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Smith.
No.
Beal.
Aye.
Quam.
Aye.
9-4.
HB 1001 passes 9-4. Okay, we will move on to HB 1002. An act to revise certain provisions regarding documents of the legislature. Do we have any proponent testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Leader. This is Steve Haugard, District 10 Representative, Speaker of the House. This provision is really more in the nature of cleanup to be in accord with what we're presently doing. Some of the things in the bill, as it indicates, contracts covering printing of pre-filed bills and resolutions and so on, those are no longer needed. And I would just point out that in reference to 2-7-4 and 2-7-6, those were statutes that were originating in 1967 and revised all the way up through 1984. This is simply an interest in cleaning up the existing statutes so they're consistent with the way we're going to do business from this point forward with the electronic system. As you'll see on page 2, line 8 indicates it shall be electronically attached to any bill, the prisoner jail population cost estimate requirements. And then the last section, section 8, simply to be amended to clarify which statutes, and that's a style and form approach that the new code council is taking to do away with some of the references to the word inclusive as opposed to simply saying which statutes you're talking about. So that's the essence of that bill, and I'd ask that the committee favorably review it and approve it.
Thank you. Do we have any more proponent testimony? Any more proponent? Seeing none, do we have any opponent testimony? Good morning.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Nathan Sanderson with the Retailers Association. The nature of my comments on this are, I think, quite a bit different than the previous bill. I think this does, in many respects, genuinely clean up the code, and so philosophically, I don't have any opposition to it. I would make one point for the committee, and I'm doing it as an opponent for your consideration. In the very first section of the bill, Code Council is adding language that refers to pre-filed bills that are in accordance with rules, and the new language is adopted by the legislature. Also, as was just previously referenced, then in Section 8, which also deals with pre-filed bills, the very last sentence is amended to reflect a cut to 2-7-6. I would submit to you, though, that the last sentence says, the executive board of the Legislative Research Council shall prescribe rules for the handling and placing in proper form of such bills and resolutions subject to the provisions of the sections related earlier. My point is this. If you're adding the language that is adopted by the legislature, then you should seriously consider cutting the last sentence in Section 8 so that you've got the legislature and not necessarily just the e-board prescribing those rules. Those would be my comments, and I'd urge your consideration. I'll stand by for any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any more opponent testimony? Any more? Seeing none, I will open it up for comments by the sponsor. Or by Mr. Cummings or whoever would like to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Hallegard. As I see the bill, it's consistent with what the intent is to follow the rules of the legislative body itself. The last line, I think, likewise, is sufficient the way it is, but the Executive Board of the Legislative Research Council shall prescribe rules for the handling and placing in proper form of such bills and resolutions subject to provisions of those two statutes. So I'll invite Mr. Cummings if he has any comments he wants to make about that. I think it's adequate the way it is. That's the process we follow going through the e-board, and it ultimately is addressed by the entire legislative body, but the e-board is what the body that puts those rules forward to the rest of the chamber.
And that's the way it's been done for forever. Any questions from anyone? President Gosch.
In reference to the executive board, that's an existing statute and has been for quite some time. I mean, if I'm reading this right, last time this was amended was 1984? I guess that was the amendment. Is that correct?
That's the last time there was any revision to that statute, 274, yeah. And the last revision to 276 was in 1969. That's the one that's essentially being excluded. We're talking about through 275, which is section one of the bill.
Any other questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mr. Cummings, when I read this last sentence, it seems like we're just striking the reference to section 276, which deals with the contract covering the printing of pre-filed bills and resolutions. Am I correct in that? Yeah. Okay. Okay.
That's correct. There's no use for it anymore.
So, and we're repealing that statute in section 2, and that's why we're then leading that reference down below, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Any further questions and or action? Yes, we're in action.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gosch.
Move to pass.
Second by Representative Smith. Any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just this is clean up to the changes that we've made when it comes to printing and electronic filings, so on and so forth. In terms of executive board, that's that verbiage has been used, and we've been doing that, without actually doing the research, but possibly since 1967. So, I mean, I don't know that needs to be necessarily changed. I think Bill's good in its form. Oh, yes, please.
Okay. With that, we have a motion. Do pass. I will have the secretary call the roll. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no.
Representatives Anderson.
Aye.
Dennard.
Aye.
Diedrich.
Aye.
Goodwin.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Haugard.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
McCleary.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Beal.
Aye.
Quam.
Aye.
13 ayes.
Motion passes 13-0. Okay, we will move on to HB 1003.
Morning, Mr. Chair. Steve Haugard, District 10 Representative, in regard to House Bill 1003. This bill, likewise, is an effort to bring back into the control, sole control of the legislature, compensation of employees and certification and payment of compensation to officers and employees in 259. Pretty straightforward. The statutes now provide as they do, and those can certainly be handled by rule as opposed to having it in statute. As I mentioned before, obviously it was functioning fine all the way from 1889 through 1939 when they decided to put it in statute for some reason, and some revisions along the way, but that's I believe more appropriately a decision made solely within the legislative body as opposed to asking for executive confirmation of it. So for those reasons, I think it's appropriate to repeal these two sections.
Okay, thank you. Any other proponent testimony? Any other proponent testimony? Seeing none, I will open up to opponent testimony. Good morning.
Mr. Yeah. Chair, members of the committee, Nathan Sanderson, Retailers Association. I'll be brief. I touched on this on 1001. If you want to compensate more employees, pay them more, how would you go about doing it? You'd repeal the statutory provisions and you would move all of those things to rule. I submit to you that's exactly what's happening. Legislative procedures hearing last week, there was a proposal to amend Joint Rule 3-1 that would change the compensation from a joint select committee, a group of people, to the Speaker in the House and the President Pro Tem in the Senate. And so if you remove the statutory provision, all that would need to happen in order to effectuate that change is a change to Joint Rule 3-1. So I would urge you to defeat the bill. I don't think that it's good government, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Any other opponent testimony? Okay, seeing none, I'll open it up for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Helgard, District 10. Well, I would disagree. I do think it's good government for the legislature to be in a position where it can do as it chooses and recognize its needs for staffing and compensation. And up to this point, the entire legislative budget, to run the entire legislative body, to buy our chairs, to make revisions to the chambers, has accounted for 15/100ths of 1% of our budget. And if somehow the other branches of government find that offensive, that we might choose to hire some additional staff, I think that the legislature ought to step up and simply say, we'll run our own House, we'll run our own Senate, and we'll take care of our own business. And if someone goes off the rails and tries to abuse this, there are plenty of procedures within the legislature where we can act on that and restrain whatever issues we see as problematic. So I would just simply ask that you support this revision, this repeal, and allow the legislature to conduct its own business.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
President Diedrich.
I'm just interested in the transparency and the public availability to that information related to any level of spending by any branch of government. And so my question is, how does the general public know, or how do they find the information if they want to know, okay, what is the legislature spending on their staff? Where and how do they find that information so that they can?
Mr. Chair, Representative Diedrich, they can pick up the phone, they can send an email, completely transparent. Quite the opposite of what we're encountering right now with the executive branch and agencies trying to get information about budget issues, specific budget issues. But when it comes to the legislature, you can pick up the phone or you can email and you'll get your answers quite quickly. So it's quite transparent.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. So I'm looking at the statute that's the statute's being proposed to be repealed. And the process under the statute requires the salaries or the compensation to be fixed by a joint select committee of both houses. And is there typically a committee report then that is becomes public record? Or I'm just wondering, how does a decision by a joint select committee become transparent as opposed to a decision by the e-board? And how does the public access that?
It's all part, Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich, it's all part of our journals. Those are submitted, those are signed, those are acted upon each year by the legislative body.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Representative Dennert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much of a question, but just a comment. After Representative Dietrich asked that question, I looked up, if you go to open.sd.gov and you type in the employee, like I type in one of the clerks of the House, and I can come up $20 hourly is the wage. So it's relatively easy to find out if you just do a quick search on open.sd.gov.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gosh.
It's for Mr. Sanderson, please. Good. I'm reading through these questions, or reading through these statutes, and I have to ask, what is it the retailers are concerned with on how we pay our employees?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gosh. When I started work with the Retailers Association, one of the conversations that I had with my board of directors was that in order for us to ensure that we have the ability to continue to have great state to do business, low regulations, reasonable taxes, those kinds of things, we can't only engage on those issues that directly affect the hardware store. We have to engage on the issues that affect the legislature as a body and the entire process. And so my board of directors strongly supports our engagement on the legislative process. And I would submit that pulling some of these things out of statute and putting them to rule weakens the legislative process. Now, in this specifically, we're talking about essentially finding a way to compensate employees in a new fashion, different than what has been done in the past. I've said it before in testimony. I mean, this idea that rule changes are equivalent to statute in transparency and in public engagement and openness, I completely disagree with that. Completely disagree with that. I mean, harken back to the Legislative Procedure Committee hearing this last week. Those things weren't posted on that page for legislative procedure. Yeah, were they talked about in e-board months and months before? Sure. Does a member of the public know that the executive board have anything to do with the board on legislative procedures? I mean, these are the kinds of things that we're sort of passing off because we're familiar with the process. Look at it through the eyes of your constituents and my retail business members. When they go online, they're trying to find out what the statutes say. And now they'll look up House Bill 1003, and they see that two sections of code are repealed, and they don't have any idea what they are. And so our engagement is hopefully being a fiduciary for the citizenry of the state of South Dakota and our almost 4,000 member businesses. Thank you, Representative.
This was for the Representative Haugard. Help me out on this. I think I know the answer, but joint select committees is stated in 2-5. That would be somebody you would appoint, correct, as a speaker?
Well, that's correct, and I need to clarify. There was a modification of that joint select committee, and the process we did follow was to receive a slate of modifications to the compensation for the staff and then to act on that. So that's the way it's conducted today, but it's open and transparent. As was pointed out, OpenSD takes care of any questions people have.
So just to make perfectly clear, this joint select committee for the House would be appointed solely by you. Is that correct? According to the way the statute is now, if we weren't to repeal it. on 2-5. It just simply says upon the receive the compensation determined and agreed upon a joint select committee of both houses.
Right, and we're trying to make this consistent with the procedures we're following. So as I mentioned, the compensation levels were addressed by both the president pro tem and the speaker.
One more. Yes. To my recollection, didn't we just recently vote to change the rules? And in that procedural rule policy, didn't we change this to even take it further out of, say, your hands and make it an executive board that's elected by the legislature?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Questions, comments, or action? Representative Gosch.
Move to pass.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Goodwin. Any discussion?
I guess my discussion on this would be the process works. Excuse me, just one second. Get that out of there. The process has worked and is working. We held a joint rules committee that we discussed this issue, and I myself brought the amendment because I felt that simply putting it in the hands of the speaker and the pro tem was probably a little bit less open government. So I brought an amendment to make it the executive board, which would be an open committee, open to the public, far more open than say a speaker in any form, just appointing his friends to be on a committee to do what he wants anyway. So I would argue that by us repealing this, and going with the rules that we have, we actually are strengthening that process. So I would urge you to vote yes.
Any further comments? Seeing none, I will have the secretary call the roll. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no.
Representatives Anderson.
No.
Dennert.
Aye.
Diedrich. Goodwin.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Haugard.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
McCleary. Peterson, Smith, Beal?
Aye.
Quam?
Aye.
So, 8-4.
HB 1003 passes 8-4 and one excused. Okay. With that, we come to the end of our calendar. 1004 was deferred till sometime next week. There's some discussions going on that one. So we will not have a meeting on Monday. God bless. Okay. Any other further discussion on anything for the good of the committee? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by McCleary, seconded by Anderson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. We are adjourned.